happy St. Patrick's Day to you and to all the Irish out there. One of the most magnificent things that ever happened to this planet was Ireland and the Irish people. They are wonderful. And per usual, I think I've done this now for about 20-some years in this entire existence here, but as many years as well. Dermot Flanagan is kind enough to join us. He lives right outside of Dublin, Ireland, and he is, of course, a lawyer or barrister in Ireland. He joins us every St. Patrick's Day to talk about all things Irish. Hi, Dermot.
Hi, Matt. That's some introduction. I hope I can live up to that one.
How are you?
And happy Patrick's Day.
I'm doing fine. It'll be par for the course if we fail here. So.
Yeah.
I will say, it did sound like after 2 years of canceled parades and everything because of the COVID pandemic, that things were kind of opening back up in Ireland again, correct?
Correct, yeah. Everything did open up. We're past any restrictions on the after COVID, and so it's just a fully open economy. And the parade was on today with John C. Reilly, came over from Chicago to lord over it and be the guest of honour. From what I'm watching online, he seems to be enjoying himself in Dublin. I wasn't aware he's a regular guest to the city, so we're lucky to have him.
Well, John C. Reilly, speaking of great choices, I mean, if you're going to get someone Irish, get either a great actor or else get someone who makes everyone laugh, and John C. Reilly is brilliant. That's a great choice for Grand Marshal of the St. Patrick's Day Parade.
Yeah, he seems to be enjoying it. Now, the parade was back to normal, 400,000 people in the center of the city today, which isn't a lot in American terms, but that's roughly half the size of the city. Well, no, a little under half the size of the city turning up for the parade. So it was great to be back. Great to see something normal.
And how are things going right now, COVID? I mean, it's like I know, like the United States, there have been, you know, peaks and valleys on this whole pandemic process. Where are you guys at right now with the COVID pandemic?
Well, I mean, statistically, if you like, we're 80% vaccinated, so we're fully open. Schools, parks, shows, live concerts, everything's back open. In total, we had, what did I read, 6,600 deaths throughout the pandemic, and about 1.5 million cases overall. But since it hit the vaccination at 80%, everything's opened up again, and it seems to be back to normal. There's a lot of daily cases, but none of them, not a great percentage being hospitalized. Generally, the vaccine seems to be doing its job for the moment.
Well, and how did Omicron do with Ireland? Did you guys get a big bump with that one?
No, we didn't get a big bump. It came at a time, we were very quick to get vaccinated. I think by the time Omicron hit, we had already hit over 70 or 77% vaccinated. So that was a help. We didn't get the big spread of it we expected from the UK. And it's hard to tell now because the vaccine seemed to have worked. The spread is in the schools mainly, but it's not affecting the children very much. There's thankfully none hospitalized. So really, no, if this new variant of Omicron hasn't hit us yet, the one that's kind of looming in China and I think has leaked out a little at this stage. We haven't been hit by that yet.
No, and I know in the United States, from our modeling guy, Joe Eastman, who we've had on the air, he said that there are so many people that got the primary variant of Omicron that the secondary variant so far has really not caught on here. But Germany, Hong Kong, China, they're all having fits with it right now.
Yeah, and you got to have to see what the effect of having 2 million refugees out of Ukraine spreading across, God help them, you know, how that's going to affect the spread as well. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure where they were vaccine-wise in Ukraine before the war. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where people are traveling, we have mass movement of people, you have mass movement of everything else as well. So we'll see. It's the least of their concerns at the moment, but I'm sure COVID, we haven't seen the end of it, but we seem to be over the hump.
We'll definitely talk about Ukraine here in a little bit. I want to talk, did this expose faults within the Irish healthcare system? Because in the United States, one of the things that was very clear is that the healthcare system we had created when this pandemic began was not prepared, especially in rural parts of this country, to deal with a massive pandemic where the medical centers had to be, you know, local community hubs. It was just not prepared for it. And I think we've learned our lesson. How did things go in Ireland? Were there holes exposed?
Well, look, there was no country prepared for a pandemic, none were. But generally speaking, they responded very well. We're very much like Britain. We have a healthcare system for all. So the hospitals were set up for dealing with the public en masse. But no one was. We didn't, for example, have enough ICU units. We didn't have the facilities to set up field hospitals with the help of the military, like, you know, America might have. So what they did was the government took over hotels and conference centres for the duration and set up field hospitals in those. And, you know, people came out of retirement, nurses came out, paramedics came out and you know, lent a hand. And they got on top of it. I'm going to give them credit. They got on top of it very quickly. But there isn't any country in the world, anyone across Europe, anyone across the United States or anywhere else that was ready for this.
Did you have a lot of...
You've got to be honest.
Did you have a lot of people like we had where, like, the vaccines are... Bill Gates is trying to track you and make you a lizard man, you know? Did you have a lot of that?
I passed a protest. I was down in Cork in the South one day, and I passed a protest, anti-vaxxers, and there were five people. I nearly joined them because I'm feeling sorry for them. Luckily, we didn't have a lot of anti-vaxxers. We have people to complain about just about everything, but we didn't really get the anti-vax brigade.
I got to imagine when you see, because I mean, now once again, what's the population of Ireland right now?
Oh, touching 5 million, basically. So
we have 5.8 million, 5.7 million here in Minnesota. Okay, you said you had 6,600 deaths. We had 12,000, and I think the difference. Yeah, the difference is the fact that we had large swaths of the state where the belligerent idiots basically just kept saying, "I'm not going to get vaxxed, but I don't want." They kept wanting to go out and get their drinks and go out and get their appetizers, and you know, it was really kind of a full fledged display of selfishness here in the United States.
Well, look, I mean, I watched the news, I watched the states, especially your state a lot because of you. I can see the polarization, and it's pretty sad. Having said that, you know, you also have very large cities, you have large transport systems, you have a culture of apartment living and condo living, so you have a lot more to fight against. We're a bit more spread out. Mm-hmm. It's going to spread through a city like Minneapolis far quicker than it is through, you know, any rural region or town in Ireland.
Mm. Well, and
give yourself a pass.
Well, and also, it's kind of one of those things where there still is a, and I don't want to say it quaintness, but there still is a lot of people that just generally they work and they live and they spend most of their time around their house, you know, as opposed to, you know, Minneapolis, where you're constantly, we'll go to St. Paul, we'll go, you know, you go to Wisconsin. There's so much more traveling over here. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's absolutely true. But and even from eating out, it's you know, generally everyone still cooks at home and eats at home, except for the weekend. So there's a lot of that. But we did shut down. We shut down very quickly. As early as April 2020, we shut down everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't. I saw the debates in the States and all that. When we say shut down, we shut down every bar, every restaurant, every sporting event, every music event, and we quite literally locked the country down. For the first time was locked down for 3 weeks, then it was opened up again partially, then it locked down for 2 months and opened again partially. I mean, we spent 2 years in effective lockdown. Now, and that was with the cooperation of the people. I don't think you were going to get that across. Mm-hmm. All of the states.
Well, did you have any pubs that were like, you know what, the heck with this, I'm opening up? Did you have anyone try that like we had here?
No. That would have been a serious offense, and they didn't. They wouldn't be trading. No, we had complete lockdown. And now, of course, the government stepped in, and Europe stepped in. Europe had a €2 trillion euro fund, and people were paid to keep the businesses closed.
Mm-hmm.
And they were paid to keep them closed and paid to keep their employees at home. So it worked, but it was a real genuine lockdown, and nothing was happening.
I do want to mention your dear son he's asymptomatic, right? He's got it, but he's asymptomatic, right?
Yeah, he's a 6'2" monster. He's in there. he's sitting in there. He's enjoying it. He's getting his food delivered up to him in his room. He's on his PlayStation. He's got his bass guitar. I have no sympathy for him. I'll tell him you have sympathy for him, but he's fine.
Tell him the poor, wretched Americans have sympathy for him. We feel for him. Because your schools, as you said, your schools are up and going, and they've, you know, once you got to that 80% threshold, pretty much everything, okay, we're good.
Yeah, fine. That's exactly what they did. So we're good. We're going to take now whatever comes. And so far, it's worked. How long is that now? That's, 3 months old now?
Yeah.
So it's not that long ago.
Heaven forbid we allow science to have a say in this country, for God's sakes.
no comment. I've been watching some of your news anchors recently, and I'm mistaking them for the Comedy Channel, but
we'll get to that too here in just a little bit. One thing, the last time you and I talked, we had the thing of Brexit hanging over. And of course, Ireland had the unique situation where Northern Ireland was, there's an open border with Northern Ireland and Ireland, but yet with England leaving and part of the United Kingdom is Northern Ireland, people were saying, are you going to put a hard border back up? That was never going to be a go.
Yeah.
They ended up basically creating their own kind of province with Northern Ireland where it's kind of separated from the rest of the United Kingdom. How are things going with that?
Well, that's not, well, how things are going is we hit the pandemic and then we hit the war in Ukraine. That has not sorted itself out. It's in limbo. There's no final agreement between Europe and Britain on the treatment of Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland's very peculiar. It's a tiny portion of Ireland. It's got six counties, got in total population of about 1.1 million people. And it is mostly agricultural. The cities are large-scale unemployment. It's completely different in the south. I mean, the south at the moment, on paper, with its GDP, is wealthier than UK, France, Germany, or even the US at the moment on paper, whereas the north is akin to the UK, which is in a bit of a spiral at the moment. That problem's not gone away. It's just other things have overtaken it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, the border runs down the Irish Sea. And I wouldn't even get into the technicalities of what is checked going between north and south and north and the UK and what isn't. It would take a very long time. Suffice to say that when things settle down, that will still be there to be resolved. And it's not going to be resolved easily.
You know, it's one of the things...
It's not affecting the economy in the south. The economy in the south is booming. But it's having a hugely detrimental effect on the north.
Since I've known you, since I've had the privilege of knowing you, I've it's been interesting because we've watched Ireland go from a country that was, they couldn't get out of their own way economically, and now they are, because of where they're at today, they're stronger and stronger. And it was interesting when I've been to Ireland with you, and we went up to the border, and the difference between the two countries. I mean, the UK treats Northern Ireland wildly different than the Irish. And there is a marked difference in those two areas. And once again, I can't believe too many people in Northern Ireland are happy with how the British government is treating them.
It's difficult. If you're, it's about 50-50 up north, divided between union, those who would like to remain part of the UK and those who would like to reunite with the South. It's about 50-50. All of them, 100% of them, would love to be part of the South economically and have what's going on down here. It's just politics, where their loyalties lie. The British themselves, I'm pretty sure the majority of Britain would love to divest themselves of Northern Ireland. It costs them €10 billion a year to run it. Mm. I heard a bit, just the way things kind of link up, Britain were talking about having to extend or increase their defence spending by €10 billion a year because of this new Cold War. And I thought to myself, well, there's a very easy way to get that €10 billion, just bugger out of Northern Ireland and give it to us. You won't be spending €10 billion up there every year. But like, it's incredible that you're right. It's not that Britain treats them unfairly. In fact, they cost Britain a fortune. It's that it's a very difficult issue, and one which kind of is, it's going to resolve itself again, time.
Well, and it should be mentioned too that I don't know of anyone. I read the Irish papers too. I don't know anyone in Northern Ireland who doesn't want to have that open border with Ireland. They see the value there, And so it's what's interesting is there definitely seems to be a shift in the mentality of the pro-union guys. And don't get me wrong, I know there's a lot of guys up there that are, you know, UK all the way, and they're not going to change. But at the same time, there is this understanding that, yeah, you know, you can't just shut down Ireland now, because this is a good relationship with Northern Ireland and Ireland. And at the very least, yeah, as you said, on one side, you could just give them back. And I think most people there would be economically thrilled. But the reality is that even with the two separate entities, that open border is something that both sides see as value.
The open border is that nobody wants to close the border. On an agricultural side, and perhaps if you have listeners out in the state, they'll understand this. Quite a substantial amount of the Northern Irish herd of cattle is milked in the south of Ireland. Quite a lot. You know, initially the border, you have to understand these borders are open. Like if you're walking across a field and, you know, you take a step and suddenly you're like, oh, well, that's Northern Ireland. You just take a step backwards. Oops, there's the south. And you just take another, you know, that's the way it is. So, it is literally the case that the dairies that process the milk from a lot of the Northern Irish farmers are in the southern side. And vice versa, there'd be other back and forward in relation to agricultural products. There's very little other industry in Northern Ireland, whereas Southern Ireland has all the international, high-tech companies, communication companies and information centres, and a lot of the Northern Irish drive down, which only an hour away to Dublin from Belfast, and they go to work in Dublin and the surrounding counties. So the entirety of the country would be a fraction of the size of your average state in America. Mm-hmm. So it is a bit ridiculous on many levels.
Well, and what you're hearing for the listeners here is that, you know, you think going to Canada is easy. It's nothing compared to how easy it is to go between Northern Ireland and Ireland. And this was the problem with Brexit, which, once again, the people that were for Brexit never really thought about until, hey, what about Northern Ireland? And it was like, that was poorly thought out, but that is Britain today.
But it's broader than that. You know, my wife's from London.
Yes.
You know, Helen's from London. The majority of the British people don't think about it because they don't particularly, they don't care, but I don't mean that in a negative way. It's just that it's not something on their radar. It's not particularly on our radar on a day-to-day basis. It's something that we all wish and hope for in terms of the union, but in reality, the economics of the North and South run very, very well together. And both North and South have equal concern in keeping that going. It's just ironically, this tiny percentage, very small percentage of diehards in the unionist side would rather see the Northern Irish economy go down the drain rather than come up with some agreement where they would be one foot in Britain and one foot out, if you know what I mean.
Well,
it's ridiculous. But it certainly doesn't. The South doesn't rely on the North, but certainly doesn't want to see any harm being brought to the North economically.
The same Britain that's you're probably going to need a passport to get to Edinburgh before too long up there. Right? Let's just be honest. They're not exactly running that place great.
No, and but it's crazy. Just statistically, again, you know, we had the pandemic and then we had this Ukrainian war has shielded conversation. It stopped conversation going on the effects of Brexit. I can tell you just, I mean, statistically, 45%, Britain are exporting 45% less to EU countries since Brexit. 45% less. And it's not because they don't want to export to EU countries. It's because the paperwork and the difficulties in the supply chain are so high that other countries just simply have stopped trading with them. They've looked elsewhere. And I mean, it's very difficult for them. And that's going to come home to roost at some stage. It's incredible to think that we only trade now between 10 and 13% a year of our exports with the UK. And that would have been much higher years ago because our companies have found alternative markets because of the difficulties of dealing with Brexit.
Dermot Flanagan joining us. Pardon me, go ahead, continue.
No, that's it. Go ahead.
Dermot Flanagan's joining us, of course, a lawyer in the Dublin area, a barrister. Is it barrister? Barrister.
Solicitor, but you know, it's six of one, half dozen the other.
Solicitor sounds like you're looking for a hooker, man. I mean, I'm a solicitor.
No
hello.
We'll just use lawyer.
Okay, we'll just use. It's like, hey, I'm using solicitor because that's perfect. Hey, here's what, Dermot. I'm going to put you on the spot here because one of the things that we've never done. You have advised me and reading about Irish history. And you have given me some great books. And so I'm going to put you on the spot right now, since it is St. Patrick's Day. Why don't you, do you have a few books that if people wanted to learn good, the good Irish history that you think are, yeah, this is the book that will get you everything you need. Is there any books that you off the top of your head that you can think of? That'd be good?
I'll give you an author, and he's written several books, and he's unbiased. In other words, he doesn't take sides. Tim Pat Coogan.
Okay.
Tim Pat Coogan. He's written books on all the major personalities in Irish history, Michael Collins, De Valera. He's written on the IRA and the history of it, but he's also written an excellent book, just is about the Irish abroad, or the Irish diaspora. He basically about the Irish who went to America. It's a fantastic book as well. But anything by Tim Pat Coogan that you can get your hands on, and he covers everything. Unless you want to go way, way back to Tudor Ireland, in which case you're looking at Professor Ellis, but you really want to be interested to go that far back.
Who's Professor Ellis?
If you can find anything by, you really want to go back.
Okay.
But anything by Tim Pat Coogan, and you'll cover.
Okay.
You'll cover the history perfectly.
Well,
I've had the great pleasure of meeting him once, and a wonderful man.
Well, did you? Where was that at?
In a bar in Kerry with my brother, who'd be a good friend of his. Yeah, that didn't end well, but it was well worth the visit.
Okay. like 90% of all meetings that happen in Ireland, a pub's involved. And so, about 50-50 on how those turn out. You know, I think that that's one of the things about Irish history in this country, is because we do have a very perverted version of it, because the Irish that came here that basically made the Irish blossom in this country, they basically were fleeing for their lives. Most of them came over in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love that scene in the movie Gangs of New York, where they basically take the Irish right off the boat and put them into the U.S. military to fight in the Civil War. You know, and that was actually, that's true. That stuff like that happened. And
did I ever tell you my grandfather landed on November 17th, 1917, and my grandfather was a big man. He was 6'2", which is very unusual for his time. And he got off the boat, and his doctor at home, like some of his friends were going with him to America, had given him notes to say they had heart murmurs or heart problems, so they wouldn't be conscripted. And he landed in Ellis Island. The story goes, himself and his friends, some American looked at them, put them on a boat, and they were enlisted in the American Army the same day. And he served his time in the American Army till after World War One. They ended up a rifle instructor up in Iowa.
In Iowa, really?
Sounds like a rifle instructor. Iowa or Indiana. I must check that. I have the paperwork. I have a great photograph of him in his uniform.
I didn't realize they were doing that in the World War One.
Yeah, they ripped up his notes from home and said, "Yeah, I'm not believing that." He was brought over and, you know, said, "Sign there." I don't know if it was a conscription or just, "Look, buddy, you'd like it in this army," and off he went. Yeah. Huh. So that was it's a great story. We got some of the paperwork from the archives, the American Legion archives, recently.
Nice. Wonderful.
And
there's so many, people that have those connections, which are, you know, and that's just a treasure, because not only it isn't just the Irish history, it's the American history too, which is so important. So that's so cool. Next time I come over there, I want to see that stuff. If you can, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, no, I'll mail it to you. It's really cool. It's nice to see. We have great photographs of when he died at 99 years of age, and the embassy here still sent people up to do a ceremony at his graveside with the flag, etc.
Wonderful. Wow.
So, you know.
Very, very nice.
Yeah, it was. Anyway, distracting you from Patrick's Day.
Well, no problem. Tell you what, we're going to take a break. When we come on back, we're actually both going to get distracted from St. Patrick's Day. I want to talk about Ukraine and the Irish perspective on what's going on over there. Dermot Flanagan joining us once again. It's an annual tradition for St. Patrick's Day. We are talking to him live in Ireland. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show on St. Patrick's Day. And since it's St. Patrick's Day, and I'm on the air still, Dermot Flanagan's joining us. He is a lawyer from the Dublin area, and he's kind enough to join us today to talk about all things Irish. But I mean, obviously, the thing that's clouding up Dermot is clouding everyone's horizon is what's going on in Ukraine. And there's, I think, a lot of people that might be saying, okay, well, it's Ireland. Is this a really big deal? The reality is the distance from Dublin to Kyiv is basically the distance from Minneapolis to Sacramento. And so this is, it's something that is, you know, it's not that far away from you. First of all, your thoughts, when all this started to happen, what was going through Ireland's mind at this point?
Well, I don't know about Ireland's mind, but I mean, most people were expecting it. Just historically, this thing was set up from 2008 with the Donbass, and then it was 2014, the annexation of Crimea. And everybody's expecting Putin to do this and to go into Europe, to go into Ukraine. I mean, if you want to go back further, since Maastricht, since the European Union pushed its way a little bit prematurely in my mind, but all the way to Russian Federation's borders, people expected trouble with Russia then. It didn't happen because they weren't ready. So historically, this was not unexpected. The manner in which he's gone in and the just the horrendous way he's bombing cities, that's unexpected. I mean, that's primitive. We thought it might be more a little bit more stealthy, that he might be trying a coup, he might be trying to force, if you like, to change political regime some way, but this kind of World War II tactics is frightening Europe to a large extent. And I mean, I said at the beginning, 2 million refugees already going across Europe. Mm-hmm. From Ireland's point of view, we have so far 6,600 odd refugees arrived, women and children. The government have set up, they've taken over hotels and put them in hotels while they wait to vet households, the people that live with ordinary households. There's already a child in my youngest daughter, she's 12, a Ukrainian child in her class. Mm. At this time, and we're expecting 20,000 shortly, a total of 20,000. But if the war becomes protracted, we could have as many as 100,000 in Ireland, within the medium term. So, yeah, I mean, what's Ireland's thoughts? It's a dreadful, dreadful thing that's happened, and Europe's just going to have to absorb all these refugees while we try and figure out what to do.
When this started, wasn't there supposed to be some sort of naval game with Russia in Irish waters and Ireland said, oh, the heck with that? No, we're not doing that.
No, there wasn't with Ireland. I mean, we have a Coast Guard. I don't think you could call it a Navy. And they do a great job, but their job is to protect fishing and look out for, basically drug trafficking. That's basically it. Now, we don't have we have a small Coast Guard. What it was the Russians were carrying out maneuvers in our waters, all to do with showing Britain that they could get around. And it was the Irish fishermen, fishing boats, trawlers, that went out and created a line in front of a Russian warships. And, and there was a dialogue and basically said, we don't want you in our waters. And the Russian fleet changed course, more because it'd probably be bad publicity to, run over a bunch of Irish fishing boats. But yeah, there was a confrontation would be too big a word for it, but there was a moment in time when Ireland were facing up to Russia, which is that fight wouldn't have lasted long.
Well, are we sure? Let's face it, the Russian military is not exactly the feared machine.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe one of the guys could have found the plug at the bottom of the warship and just pulled it. It's made in China on it,
A little bit of a design flaw there on those boats. There's no one in Ireland. No one in Ireland is on Russia's side on this, I'm presuming. Pretty much everyone is.
No. Everyone. I don't know anyone who's on Russia. We've no Tucker Carlson's here. We've no. We've no lunatics screaming and shouting like they know things. Everybody is firmly on the Ukrainian side. Someone drove a truck through the gates of the Russian embassy in Dublin recently. Mm. Nothing in it, no explosives or anything, just ran down the gates just to make a point. Mm. The Russian ambassador was very angry over that. No, it's very much pro the Ukrainians. How could we not be, the self-determination, the rights of people, etc. But we don't know where it's going to end.
Mm-hmm. You brought up, and I want to make sure this is for the record, I was talking to you a little earlier today, and you just out of the blue said, "What the hell is with Tucker Carlson?" And I'm like, "And you guys, how the heck are you guys even seeing him over there?"
We've all the channels, but I occasionally, if I have the stomach for it and want to laugh, I'll turn on Fox News. And I came across him. I knew he was there. I knew him from Trump's time, but I came across a particular rant of his talking about Putin and Russia and Ukraine, and it was so bizarre and so out. I mean, just so out of sync with reality. I started turning him on fairly regularly. it's just funny. But I realize he's taken seriously. But he's a comedy, and now he's become a bit of a thing here where people will have their Tucker Carlson moment. They'll turn him on and say the next day, "Hey, did you hear him last night?"
The Tucker Carlson moment.
Yeah, nobody takes him seriously, but they all find him quite hilarious. So they, you know, you'll be. I was down in the forecourts a few days ago. Sorry, the forecourts are the courts in the center of town where I spend a lot of time, and they're known as the forecourts because the forecourts exist there. But I was walking by one of my friends and colleagues, and he calls me over and shows me on his phone. He said, "Hey, look, there's a Carlson moment." He's just showing me. Sorry, but it's become a bit of a laugh. Hope I'm not offending anybody.
Oh, no, I think the fact that, I mean, what we can honestly say from what you just said is that this guy's a laughing stock. I mean, outside of Russian oligarchs and Putin and about 7 million Americans, he's a laughing stock. He's an embarrassment. And the fact that you said, "Oh, I pulled a Tucker Carlson," I mean, the fact that that is what the rest of the world is doing, I mean, it just, you know, the delusion of these people in this country is amazing. And yet when we hear this, I mean, they still think you want Trump over Biden. They are still convinced that the Irish, for example, were so much happier with Donald Trump than Joe Biden, that boy, oh boy, they're just clamoring to get Trump back in there. And they don't even listen to the people of the countries they're claiming to represent.
We would love to see Biden over here. I know it may not happen. He's got a lot to do and all that, but it'd be a bit of a festival atmosphere if Biden came to visit. It put a smile on even my parents. My mother's 87. It put a smile on her face when Biden got elected, because you know, obviously she'd be thinking of Kennedy and people like that. So yeah, he would be a welcome guest.
He
doesn't have to buy a golf course.
I think one of the things that's you know, as you watch what's going on in Ukraine, and you see this in this country at least, and I mean, I know it doesn't happen nearly as much or with volume, as you said, five protesters, but you know, it doesn't happen in Ireland as much. But I think one of the things that we're learning is that, you know, real heroism, real valor is not getting in a truck and driving and blocking a road in a Canada city, or basically screaming at a school board about, you know, wearing a face mask to try to keep other people, you know, healthy. That it's these images which are haunting of people that look like a book club, women who look like they're at a book club grabbing guns and going out to take on the Russian army. And I mean, it is truly amazing when you look at these people that the Ukrainians, as they're holding on. So far, I got to tell you the truth, I'm so impressed with how that military, the Ukrainians, have held back the Russians. And once again, the Russians, not exactly the fighting force we thought they were, but still at the same time, they have a manpower advantage, they've got a weapons advantage, and frankly, the Ukrainians are kicking their butts.
Well, they were in 2008. They were basically an unorganized or disorganized army. The British started training them in 2008. Mm. The British have been training them since the disturbances in the East in 2008, and they trained them even more after 2014. And they have changed them from a territorial type army to a very professional army, and that's quite evident. That gives them 12 years to 14 years, they have come a long way. Mm-hmm. And that's down to being trained by a professional army, effectively. But on the Ukraine as well, we have, I think, over 200,000 Polish living here. Mm-hmm. I have been told by the Polish, who I have a lot of Polish clients, I've been told for the last 5 years, maybe since 2016 even, that Putin was going to do this. The Polish have been waiting for it. In fact, they've nearly doubled the size of their army in that time. They've brought back national service. A lot of Polish here got their sons to take Irish passports, even though they didn't need to, because they have European passports. They can stay here quite happily, but they didn't want their sons going back to do national service, because the Polish have been expecting this for a very long time. And so have the Lithuanians, the Estonians, the Latvians. So, you know, all of those countries who've experienced, if you like, Russia before, they knew this was coming. Mm-hmm. They knew this was coming, and they've been preparing for it.
If I was Russia,
interesting from that point of view.
If I was Russia, I'd be incredibly concerned the Chinese at this point. I mean, obviously outside of the European realm, but, you know, their biggest border, their biggest threat is the Chinese. And if I'm the Chinese, I'm looking at these guys as like, we're scared of these guys. Why again? Oh, okay, nukes, fine, but... You know, we could take their military in a few days if we really wanted to do so. I think at the end of the day, it's, you know, Russia, when you have cases like this, despots become despots. And what we're seeing now with Putin is, as you're saying, he's attacking cities. He's attacking, you know, shelters where children are at. He's attacking food lines. I mean, they don't have any other place to attack because they can't take on the Ukrainians straight head forth because they get beat.
Well, here's the thing. You mentioned China. I don't think Xi Jinping would be an easy bedfellow with Putin for this reason. Whatever you think about China, and, you know, they certainly don't do things our way in the West, he is an idealist. Mm-hmm. He believes in the Chinese way, prosperity for the people, development for China. And I don't think he's an internationalist. I think he just wants to be left alone in China, Taiwan excluded. I don't think he's any ambition outside that. But he doesn't want to do it the way we do it. He's not about to introduce democracy into China. He believes the Chinese, him and his party believe the Chinese need to be led. But he's an idealist. And I think he recognizes that Putin is not an idealist. Putin's just a gangster.
Yes, he is.
He's just a head of a mafia. And he's, in that regard, he has no principles. Now, Xi Jinping does. They're not the ones we agree with. They're not ours. But he has them. And so I don't think this idea that everyone's worried that Xi Jinping, you know, might come to the aid of Russia or might take the time to invade Taiwan because Russia's in Ukraine. I don't think that's likely. I just don't think they're easy bedfellows. I think they're completely different people. You're dealing with an idealist versus a mafia head.
I was going to ask you, do the Irish think that we should, that NATO should basically give whatever Ukraine needs to them, planes, everything?
Well, I can't speak for the Irish, but I don't believe that is. I mean, I don't think that's a general take. I do have some friends who are members of our parliament, our Dáil, as we call it here, and I don't think, being practical hat on, I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think it's a good idea to enforce a no-fly.
Uh-oh. Did we just
lost him there?
We lost him.
I'll try to call him.
I'll tell you what. Let's take the break. Why don't we're at a good time anyway. We'll take a break. We'll come back and see if we can get Dermot back on the line with us. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show, St. Patrick's Day edition. Dermot Flanagan, apparently, Dermot said this, Putin must have got you, right?
Yeah, I was knocked off. I better be careful what I say. I take it all back.
No, you don't. Well, you were mentioning the Ukrainians about, you know, funding them. We were talking about whether or not we should give them all the materials they need, and you're not quite sure there. That's when you cut out.
No, you should give them all the materials, everything. But when you get into aircraft and you get into no-fly zones, you're talking about direct confrontation with NATO and invoking Article 5, et cetera. And, you know, nobody wants to expand this to World War III. And if you give Putin an excuse to go back to his people and say, see, NATO are attacking us. You know, the Russians are very nationalistic people. They're very proud people. They're very blinded by the propaganda they've had for years. And the last thing you want is to encourage his troops who are currently giving up and surrendering and encourage others to join the fight in Russia, you know, by saying this is a genuine fight, East versus West. So I unfortunately, much as I would love to do everything in the power for the Ukrainians, I think the way it's going is the way it's going to have to keep going. They are getting British anti-aircraft missiles at the moment that can be used at nighttime, and they'll be there soon. So I think they already have partially taken back the skies. And if they can keep going that way, it looks like the ground is theirs already, frankly.
Well, and the Russian economy has been decimated. I mean, they're trying to keep it clean. I mean, I think that's the impressive thing about what the United States and NATO did is that basically you took one of the world's leading economies and crushed it in 2 weeks. And I'm like, yeah, Saudi Arabia, you better pay attention to this because, you know, it was kind of one of those things where I'm going to be surprised if Putin isn't taken out by one of his own oligarchs.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think the oligarchs themselves can get close to him, but he's put his, did I read that he has put his spy chief and a few of those under house arrest?
Yeah.
So that's a sign of paranoia. Apparently, it's going to be very hard to get to him. He doesn't have anyone close to him. I think, like all change comes from the people. Ukraine got their revolution on the streets when the previous president... Do you remember what happened in Ukraine? There was a vote as to whether they wanted to effectively do a trade agreement with Russia or a trade agreement with Europe. The people voted for a trade agreement with Europe, and their president overturned it. They rebelled, they ousted him, and Ukraine got itself its first, you know, freely elected president. There was there was a few changes, but effectively the people make changes, and unless the Russian people want change, there's not going to be one. Mm. It has to start there. And anywhere you go, anywhere in Eastern Europe where it's happened, where we've had these, in Libya, anywhere we've had these revolutions where the people have said enough is enough, it starts with the people. Mm. So you can replace Putin and just another guy will take his place just like him unless the Russians themselves decide we don't want this anymore.
I think we should take every one of the oligarchs' yachts and make them Ukrainian homes. You know, put as many. That would be perfect, wouldn't it? It's like, we're going to put 50 people on this boat, can sleep 50, so we're going to put 50 Ukrainians on it as we take it.
Convert them to hospitals. Sell them and put the money into the Ukrainian funds. Do anything it takes to help the Ukrainians. There's nothing sadder than watching those pictures every night on television of them going across the border. And the women and children, and then the men turning around and going back. Mm-hmm. It's barbaric, really.
Well,
and the Ukrainians are incredible people, and I see what were they saying? Over 16,000 in the foreign brigade now, and increasing. They're expecting 60,000 fighters going from other countries to join the Ukrainians.
And that's fantastic, too. Well, and I mean, I want to give not just Ireland, but a lot of places in Europe are doing a lot of great things. A lot of people there, you know, the hotels that are getting people in there and the people that are helping the Ukrainians. Nice job on the Irish as they're doing. It seems like they're doing a fine job as well.
Yeah, I think Biden got to speak with our Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, today. He's over in Washington, but he had to speak to him by Zoom because he contracted COVID. Oh. So he couldn't get to meet him face to face. But the two of them were talking about Ukraine as well. And I don't think there's a single country in the West who thinks any differently. And I think that surprised Putin. It really has. To some extent, he might have misjudged America through through Trump.
Yeah.
Because certainly, had Trump still been in power, I don't think America would have galvanized itself like it has done. I think he's actually been quite shocked by the strength of the ability of the Biden administration to bring NATO together when they looked like they were so far apart, you know?
Yeah, I
think that really caught him.
Trump, he thought he had tenderized the United States down. The United States said, okay, let's ruin your economy in 2 weeks. Now you tell us who's the superpower. And so,
it was. And by the way, who the super military is, because there must be a lot of American generals looking at each other going, we trained for this, you know, can you imagine if that Russian army was up against a modern European or American?
It would be embarrassing. It would be embarrassing. All right, we only got about a few minutes left here. I want to get back to Ireland if we can.
Yeah.
Borders opening up. Borders opening up. People are going to be traveling again. I want your recommendation. You're saying you've got a person saying, I'm coming to Ireland. I want to just go see something that's just gorgeous and fun. Where should they go?
Well, you know what I'm going to say. What? I'm going to say start in Dublin, get it out of the system, and then go straight to Galway.
Galway.
Just be careful when you go to Galway because many, many people go there and far few return. They just fall in love with the place and stay.
Yes, we should make sure it's because they like going to Galway. It's not like there's a serial killer running around.
No, they just stay. They just stay because they forget they were supposed to leave. Oh, yeah. We used to call it the graveyard of ambition because once you went there, you know, nothing else mattered. You just stayed. It just became a series of music and bars and dancing and partying, and then starts all over again. So just be careful if you go to Galway. Cork, after that, you have to go down and see Cork. You won't understand a word they say, but you'll love the place. And after that, just give me a call and I'll point out the rest.
I will say this about Galway. Your assertion is absolutely correct. I think about Galway probably once a week or so, about how magnificent that town is. It is really great. Happy St. Patrick's Day. All my best to your boy.
I will. I'll tell him to stop whinging.
All my best to your wife and the girls. Dermot, it is an absolute pleasure to be able to chat with you every year on St. Patrick's Day. You represent the Irish very well. And, you know, all my best, my friend. I hope to see you before too long.
Yeah, look, thanks to you and everyone at the station. It's great. Thanks for the opportunity and best of luck. Yeah, we hope to see you before too long as well. Just even a short hop over and back to get over there.
All right. Dermot Flanagan, a lawyer outside of Dublin, kind enough to join us as he always does on St. Patrick's Day. Thanks, Dermot. We do appreciate it.